Who and the Republicans are still running the government, trying to run it into the ground? Hope we can make it through July without Rocket's red glare becoming more than lyrics in a song. For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael.
You're listening to a summer membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-801-1378. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Dan Raphael, Eric Leuschner, Dejon, and Josh Salem. The producer is Hannah Francis, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Brian Bull, Faraz Siddiqui, Isabel Charlet, and Dr. Anthony Leisowitz. The interim evening news director is Hannah Francis. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Eric Leuschner.
And I'm Josh Salem. Earlier in the newscast, we incorrectly attributed a statement to Donald Trump made by his National Intelligence Director. KBOO regrets the error. All of our KBOO programs are made possible by support from our members. KBOO is currently in our summer fundraising drive, and our goal is to raise $50,000 by June 29th. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for news in depth with Street Roots.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You're listening to KBOO News in Depth. I'm Hannah Francis.
This week, Street Roots Pride Edition drops. I'm joined with Street Roots correspondent Zoe Toporowski about her new articles, Stories of Resilience, Black Dragon Oregon, and Oregon Lawmakers Kill Discriminatory Bills. Welcome, Zoe.
Thank you.
So first, let's talk about this story on Black Drag in Oregon. One drag queen in your story, Wendell Jackson, had a 47-year-long career and started when he was just in high school. Will you tell me a little bit more about the background stories of some of these queens in your story?
Yeah. So Wendell Jackson, or LaWanda Jackson, as she's known in drag, was one of the first, like in the first wave of drag queens in Portland. And she now performs and coaches in Las Vegas. So her career is still very prevalent, which is always really cool to see. But the common theme amongst a lot of these drag queens are just how much they love doing what they do. And I talked to Poison Waters, who is another Portland drag icon currently, who shared how the representation of having Black people in drag is what got Poison Waters into drag, because before, like, it had never clicked that it was something that could be done. And so all of these queens, the ones who started in the late 80s and the late 70s, and the ones who started just a few years ago, all of them are there because they love it. And it was really inspiring to hear their stories of resilience and representation and everything that they've been able to accomplish.
Thanks. Your story also mentions some Black exclusionary laws, and as well as anti-cross-dressing laws that have been a big barrier to a lot of people expressing themselves and just being able to live their life. Can you tell me a little bit about these laws specifically and how they impacted folks in your story?
Yeah, so specifically when talking to LaWanda Jackson, she recalled a lot of laws that were in place when she first started drag and shared that her uncle was a drag queen but would only perform in basements with friends because there were laws that spread across the United States, but they're not super well known, and because they were just like what the norm was. If there was somebody who was cross-dressing in public, they had to show that they were wearing at least three articles of clothing that matched their sex assigned at birth. And so that meant for drag queens, if they were out in drag, they had to prove that they were still wearing male, like quote unquote, like male attire under their drag. And so for a lot of people, that pushed them to only stay in these clubs or stay in basements of houses. And like, it kept the community very small and very out of the public. And, you know, a lot of queer history really, for a long time excluded Black people and Black voices because of the culture of the United States at the times. And so really when looking at Black exclusionary laws that were happening across the state, of course they were happening in these underground drag clubs, in these other underground gay bars. And like they were very prevalent throughout the queer community. And so it took a lot of people to really make their voices stand out in that community in order to break those barriers. So that's why they're still not as recognized, but there have always been Black drag queens and Black people leading the movement in queer rights.
Thanks. How can drag be a means for folks fighting back? You mentioned that in your article.
Yeah. I think that for a lot of people, being visible and being yourself is the best way that you can fight back. I think when there's rhetoric that people, like certain groups of people, shouldn't exist or shouldn't be present in our society, the best way to fight back is to be there and to show up. And so I think for a lot of these queens, and I also talked to a fantastic drag king as well, so these drag performers, for them to be just who they are and to show up, it's the best way to fight back because your presence can't be denied when you're there.
Thanks. Is there anything else that you'd like to add about that story?
I think the main things from this story are just hearing people's stories, you know, just being able to see where people come from and how they found this art. And I think that drag performers are so unique because like you see a drag queen and it's like you idolize them. They're so cool. They have all of this confidence and like that's how I perceive them. And so, but hearing their stories of everything that they've gone to get on to that stage, of hearing, you know, how it's not always, you know, full confidence, you know? And so I think just learning people's stories is always just such an important thing when talking about any group of people. And I think that Black drag performers are one such group who deserve that attention.
Absolutely. So then your second story, which is published in this this collection this week, is Oregon lawmakers kill discriminatory bills. Mm-hmm. So can you first give me an overview of what these bills are?
Absolutely. So in the 2025 legislative session, Republican lawmakers proposed 8 bills. 4 of these bills targeted transgender athletes competing in sports, specifically in public and private schools, and they all targeted different aspects of trans people in sports. And so obviously that's a theme that we've seen very prevalent in in the community, and it was proposed in Oregon as well. And then there was also a bill aimed to ban gender-affirming surgeries for minors in Oregon. And then there was a bill that that was really, really fascinating because it would have given healthcare workers the right to refuse participation in abortion procedures, gender-affirming care, and physician-assisted suicides on the basis of personal belief or religion. So that was a really interesting bill to read about. And then the final one was removing the word gender identity from certain statutes of Oregon law. All of these bills died in committee and never made, there were no public hearings, there were no work sessions. More progressive lawmakers definitely made sure that those bills didn't go anywhere, so there was never a discussion that these bills were going to be passed. However, they were proposed this session.
So what does Oregon look like in terms of protection for folks?
Yeah, so Oregon is one of the most protected states in terms of LGBTQ plus rights in the country, starting back in 2007, passing non-discrimination laws nearly 14 years prior to when the federal government passed non-discrimination laws on the basis of sexual orientation and gender. And Oregon's also a leading state in gender-affirming care laws, and those were actually just amended in 2023 to add more protections and allow these rights for not only Oregon residents but people seeking care in Oregon. So we're surrounded by states like Idaho who have banned gender-affirming care. People in Idaho who are seeking gender-affirming care can come to Oregon and get those, the health care that they want and that they deserve. And so there's that. Oregon was also the first state in the country to introduce X as a gender marker on government documents, since a handful of states have followed that. And also in this past year, a few states have retracted that.
Yeah, so some states are trying to take away some of those protections. Are there folks trying to make improvements on that right now?
Yeah, so one of the biggest things that is happening in Oregon in terms of advancing these rights are through Basic Rights Oregon is sponsoring a ballot measure that is hoped to get onto the 2026 election that would amend the Oregon Constitution. This is called the Equal Rights for All campaign, and it would amend a section of the Oregon Constitution to add language that bans discrimination laws and policies and actions around pregnancy and pregnancy outcomes. So this would relate to abortion care and IVF treatments, as well as gender identity, health decisions related to gender identity and sexual orientation, as well as the right to marry regardless of gender and sex. And all of these things, yes, are written into Oregon law, but are actually not outlined in the Oregon Constitution. And the Oregon Constitution still has a lot of outdated language in terms of things like marriage and protections and things to that extent. And so what Basic Rights Oregon is really advocating for is to change the direct language happening within the Oregon Constitution to better set up Oregon for whatever could happen on a federal level and the legal component of that.
Thank you. Yeah, some of the outdated language is like marriage is between a man and a woman, right? Yeah.
Yes, that's correct.
Pretty bizarre. I mean, not actually bizarre, totally normal, but.
Yeah, but I mean, it doesn't, It's interesting because Oregon law doesn't reflect what the Constitution says.
Right.
So, one of the things that people were telling me is we're not changing anything with this ballot measure. We're just updating the actual Constitution to reflect the laws that have already been passed by Oregon lawmakers and by constituents.
Makes a lot of sense. Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Zoe. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
On this story in particular, I think that legal protections are one of the things that people are scared of right now because there's so much unknown and there's so much changing. But it's also important to remember that Oregon is a protected state and that's not changing. And states have a lot of rights in terms of the populations that they serve. That being said, it still is a very scary time, and there's a lot of advocates and community organizations. Like I spoke with the Q Center in Portland, and it's just important that there are communities and resources to come together during times where it can be very challenging.
Thanks so much for joining me, Zoe.
Thank you so much.
You've been listening to
KBOO News In Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You're listening to KBOO News In Depth. I'm Hannah Francis. Today, I'm joined by Laura Grimes, the Executive Director of Oregon Arts Watch, to talk about some of the recent stories from that publication. Welcome to the show, Laura.
Thanks for having me, Hannah.
Absolutely. Thanks for being here. So the first story I want to talk about is called Unpacking the Fairview Training Center. This is a story talking about the 25th anniversary of the closing of the Fairview Training Center, which was a center for people with developmental disabilities, which was operated by the state of Oregon. And yeah, the institution was open for almost 100 years. Will you tell me a little more about this?
Yeah, I'm glad you provided that background. Fairview's Training Center operated in Salem from 1907 to 2000. It has what I would politely call a contested legacy. It's a very horrific sort of history. And the story recounts about, well, it doesn't go into that history so much so that we're not reliving that trauma. But what it does do is it really talks about the stories and this art project to help deal with the healing, to help to bring the community together, to sort of be able to have a way to express their feelings about what happened there. So last year, Bruce Burris, who is an artist who collaborates with neurodiverse artists, received a Creative Heights grant from the Oregon Community Foundation, and that produced this very ambitious project called Our Fairview, which is a constellation of activities such as art events, workshops, conversations, and they've started a website called Our Fairview, which is like a repository, a place where they're gathering information and resources. They're posting interviews about Fairview. They're documenting various art projects that they're working on and announcing events. So it goes into, you know, what they hope to accomplish here and what some of those events have been. They're just really hoping that this project stirs further public interest and that people develop a deeper understanding about Fairview's legacy, both the past and how we plan to live with this going forward, and helping people who live with that experience, you know, help to heal. So the Burris is actually works with people who lived at Fairview or experienced it in some way. And they have a variety of projects that is working with them to help help them to express their feelings about it. So one of the things they did that Burris and some of the people that he works with is that they went through some of the boxes that are in the state archives about Fairview, and they found a file marked Russell Childers. who was someone who lived at Fairview most of his life. He was placed there in 1926 against his family's wishes, which is just really sort of heartbreaking to hear. And Childers taught himself how to carve wood, and his art practice actually helped to garner his release from Fairview in 1965. And he went on to have quite a bit of a professional recognition for his artwork before he died in 1998. So Burris and the team have worked with artists who have developmental challenges, and they created clay replicas of the tools from Childers' toolbox, which you can see on their website and see in our story on Arts Watch. And this work, these clay pieces, are part of the Willamette Valley Rehabilitation Center's collection in Lebanon, Oregon, and it's on long-term loan to the Hallie Ford Museum of Art in Salem. So that was exciting. And another project is it's called Institutional Locks, where artists create images of locks out of clay. Locks explore that institutional memory of Fairview and help people to explore their personal memories and trauma. So I just really see how the memories from Fairview, who are held by the people who worked at the facility and people who live nearby, as well as the people who live there. It's important to recognize how trauma has the ripple effects beyond the people who are directly affected and targeted. And it becomes this sort of collective trauma as a society that we all carry. So it's important to acknowledge and work through that. So our Fairview will continue to have events, workshops, and conversations through summer of 2026.
Another article I'd like to talk about is Mariachi Tradición, Cultural Education Through Music. And this article is about the Forest Grove High School Music Program's 10th anniversary concert, which is celebrating mariachi's growing presence in Oregon schools. Can you tell me about this a little bit more?
Yeah, I thought it was fascinating that there's this particular program in Forest Grove that's been around for only 10 years. And this story was tied to their occasion where they had a concert recently that celebrated their 10th anniversary. But what I really loved about the story was about sort of learning about the history of mariachi and its growing influence here in Oregon and how it's taken hold in schools. And so it really kind of had the story has a bigger picture about that. I loved knowing about the history of mariachi. It was fun for me to find out how it emerged in Western Mexico in the 18th century. And then it diversified and spread throughout the country. And over time and geography, it blended influences and instrumentation from many cultures. So it's become this hybrid of musical styles that encompasses everything from sentimental ballads to, really upbeat rhythms. And I was so the real the kind of the granddaddy of mariachi program started in Woodburn High School in 2003, but then it's really caught on. It then spread to Springfield, to Hillsboro, and this one in Forest Grove, which developed in 2015. A program even developed at Portland State University just last year. So I loved how this story that sort of is about the Forest Grove program, but about the ecosystem in general. I like how it talked about the historic legacy of these programs and the ecosystem that has been created out of it, how people who were mariachi students are now teachers, how students started training in grade school and are motivated to become more proficient and be part of an elite group. How students are motivated to attend international conferences, so it broadens their horizons. And how mariachi attracts a wider variety of students who might not feel welcome. So they go on, they have students who go on to study music in college and become professional musicians. The story recounts that. And how the groups have spread beyond the Latin community and inspired collaborations with Metropolitan Youth Symphony and the Oregon Symphony. So it's just really exciting to see this flourishing art form and how it really inspires personal and cultural growth. So last year, Mariachi Tradición, which is with the story focuses on, from Forest Grove. Even though it's only 10 years old, it placed first in the state high school music competition and among large string ensembles. And they were competing against groups that were playing classical music. So the administrators of the competition then decided to create a new mariachi category. So I thought that it was just sort of really excited to see how mariachi has become this, flourishing art form, and really how it inspires personal and cultural growth.
And the final story for today that we wanted to talk about is Remembering Darcel, Sweet Cheeky Fun. So this is a review of a production of That's No Lady, and it pays tribute to Darcel, otherwise named Walter Cole. So can you tell me about this performance and how they remembered Darcel?
Darcel was a real icon in Portland. I mean, if you think of what makes Portland distinct and the images that really come to mind, you can think of the White Stag, you can think of Portlandia, and you can think of, Darcel really is this image of Portland. And like you mentioned, Darcel is otherwise known as Walter Cole, and the love of his life was Roxy Neuhart. And so they had this. Darcel 15, which was downtown Portland, kind of near Burnside, that was around for so many years. And this is a musical production piece by Triangle, which is at the Sanctuary close on Sandy Boulevard. And this particular production was first performed in 2019. So this is reprising the role, which is sort of sweet now since Darcel passed away a couple of years ago, which I'll get into. So this particular story, it's a review by Linda Ferguson. And on our website on Oregon Arts Watch, there's also a stage and studio podcast by Dime Lo Roberts. So you can, read more about this particular production. So the play, Darcel Walter is played by Kevin C. Loomis, and Roxy, also known as Rock Neuhart, is played by James Sheringhausen. They are both reprising their roles from the 2019 production. Roxy died in 2017, and Darcel died in 2023. So the play preserves the memory of Darcel and his relationship with Roxy. I found it fascinating to kind of find out some of the history, some of their own personal stories, how Darcel, was married and had two kids before discovering that he actually liked wearing dresses and appearing in drag and was this terrific performer. So it was kind of fun to hear about the origin story of that. And but what's really nice is how they developed this loving community and created this nightclub, Darcel, where the gay, trans, and straight people, everybody it has always been welcome there. Back when they created it, and today as it continues, how it's just this really wonderful, welcoming, and fun, and joyful place. So That's No Lady, which is this musical that Triangle has put on, continues at the Sanctuary on Sandy Boulevard through June 22nd.
Thank you so much for your time, and thank you so much for sharing with me.
Yeah, and you can read all these stories and more at Oregon Arts Watch at orartswatch.org.
That was Laura Grimes, the executive director at Oregon Arts Watch, talking about some of the latest stories from that publication. More information at orartswatch.org. For KBOO News in Depth, I'm Hannah Francis.
Thank you. radio's greatest application is in broadcasting mass entertainment. Probably one of the best ways to get started is to make it a hobby and build an amateur station. It will show you more quickly than anything else whether or not you can succeed in radio.
KBOO